Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Miller Lite. Triple Hops Brewed Miller Lite. Taste greatness.
And if I'm hot shot, mama cut my hair at night. Uh-huh. In the morning, I'm short of my identity. I spent mom and dad, why can't I be who I wanna be? To be. I just wanna be myself and I want you to love me for who I am.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 439. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, I mean, we just continue to have this glorious, crisp, sunny fall weather, and I am so, so grateful for it. I'm also grateful for this amazing weekend that I had, and I hate to be a tease, but if you missed the Hubbard Street Dance Show this weekend, the world premiere of Twyla Tharp's new choreography, it was extraordinary. The whole series was extraordinary and show, and I just continue to say that there is just no better venue for performance in the city of Chicago than the Harris Theater at Millennium Park. If you have not been, go see anything there, music or dance, because it's an extraordinary, extraordinary experience. I also had the wonderful opportunity to see at Steppenwolf Theater for Young Artists the adaptation by Rebecca Gilman of Carson McCullers, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, which it's very hard to get tickets to the Theater for Young Audiences shows. And over the past few years, these adaptations of To Kill a Mockingbird or Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye have gone on to be so critically acclaimed here in Chicago, The Bluest Eye going on to New York to Off-Broadway, that this year I was determined not to miss an opportunity to go. Of course, this is the series of their shows that is targeted at mostly high school aged kids. But I have to say what I saw was profoundly moving and sophisticated and lovely production of The Heart is Lonely Hunter by Carson McCullers, a member of our community. And what's really cool is that if you get to go see that piece at Steppenwolf, Sarah Gubbins, who we had on the show a couple of months ago, the lesbian playwright from Chicago who wrote The Kid Thing, she has been endowed to write a new play, a contemporary play based on Carson McCullers' story of The Heart is a Lonely Hunter as a companion piece. So her play will be being presented in the winter, in early 2012, that's called FML, Fuck My Life, and is about how this book influences a young contemporary woman in her high school in Chicago who's coming to terms with her sexuality. And I think it's just really interesting to see the source material in the true adaptation of the book and now to see then in the winter the reinterpretation of a contemporary drama inspired by McCullers' work. So it was a big weekend of performance for me and really, really exciting one. And I'm really excited as well because we are also continuing a story in today's show about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the repeal and what is this impact actually on service men and women who want to get back into active service or into reserve service. And we had Lee Reinhardt on back in May, and we are following his story today as he is taking us through what this process is like over the past year, which we talked about in May, and also where he's heading right now into trying to get back in, get back and have a job with the U.S. military. So Lee Reinhardt on the show today. Plus, we have so much news, some very interesting stories out of the entertainment world, and much, much more about what's going on in the theater scene. If you've not seen Follies Down at Chicago Shakes, it is glorious. It is dazzling. The theater series went the other night, and wow, did we have an awesome, awesome time. So it's time to go see some performances in Chicago, and Culture Club will tell you what all those are. So it's a big show. Wow.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
The U.S. Senate voted to confirm the nomination of lesbian attorney Allison Nathan to serve as a federal district court judge. The roll call vote was 48-44, thus securing Nathan's appointment to the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York in Manhattan. Nathan's was one of three judicial nominations considered by the Senate and one of two non-consensus nominees.
The United States Supreme Court has declined to hear the case of a Louisiana gay couple who sued the state registrar for refusing to include both parents' names on their adopted son's birth certificate. Orrin Adar and Mickey wanted both their names to be listed on the birth certificate of the Louisiana-born son they adopted in 2006. However, Louisiana State Registrar Darlene Smith has recognized the adoption because the couple isn't legally married.
California Governor Jerry Brown signed into law Assembly Bill 887, the Gender Non-Discrimination Act, which will strengthen the employment, housing, and other civil rights protections for Californians on the basis of gender identity and expression. Assemblymember Tony Atkins, the Democrat from San Diego, authored the bill.
On October 8th in Madison, Wisconsin, the Presbyterian Church ordained Scott Anderson as its first openly gay minister. Anderson's ordination happened after the Presbyterian Church of the United States, numbering 2 million members, began welcoming non-celibate gay clergy this past summer. In 1990, Anderson was the head pastor of Bethany Presbyterian in Sacramento, California, when two parishioners outed him. Soon after he left the church, Anderson and partner Ian McAllister have been together for 20 years.
In San Diego, California, two of the Republican mayoral candidates are gay. Republicans have run the city for almost two decades.
In Park Ridge, Illinois, cross-dressing is now legal. The Chicago suburb, where Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was raised, dropped an 83-year-old ban on the practice. Chicago's cross-dressing law was removed in 1978 by the city council after years of court dispute.
In honor of National Coming Out Day, Whirlpool Corporation's employees posted a video for the It Gets Better campaign. Whirlpool has earned a 100% score on the HRC's Corporate Equality Index for 7 years.
North Carolina Governor Beverly Perdue said that she will vote against a proposed constitutional amendment that would ban marriage equality. Voters will decide next May if the state should prohibit same-sex marriage, civil unions, and possibly domestic partnerships. Perdue, a Democrat, says she's actually against marriage equality, but added that the economy takes top priority right now.
The University of Iowa is weighing interest for a gay-friendly fraternity. The university has 40 fraternities and sororities, including several for specific cultural groups.
A hearing and speech-impaired man who was awaiting trial for raping a deaf woman last year in Michigan is now wanted in connection with the 2004 abduction and rape of a transgender man in Pittsburgh. Christopher Lauer, 30, was linked to the first incident through DNA. Authorities said the first victim was pulled into a van, tied with duct tape, and raped while attending an event for hearing-impaired people.
Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel proposed a budget on October 12th that aims to make large strides in closing a projected $636 million shortfall. And mayoral LGBT liaison Bill Greaves is among the occupational sacrifices. After more than a decade, Greaves will not have his job after January 1st.
In Illinois, the Cook County Sheriff's Office is attempting to use DNA comparisons to identify eight of John Wayne Gacy's victims. Gacy became notorious in the late 1970s when authorities discovered that he had killed 33 boys and young men, most of whom he had raped and tortured, and had buried them in the crawl space of his house in Norwood Park. Gacy was executed via lethal injection in 1994.
Oregon's U.S. Attorney's Office has become the first federal prosecutor's office in the nation to produce a video for the It Gets Better campaign. Several prosecutors and staff members detailed their own experiences.
An ex-gay ministry leader has come out recanting previous teachings. John Smid resigned as executive director of Love in Action Ex-Gay Ministries in 2008 and has been rethinking his beliefs ever since. In a new blog post, Smid acknowledged his own homosexuality, even though he's married to a woman.
And one of the gay movement's most important pioneers, Dr. Franklin E. Kameny, has died of natural causes at the age of 86. Kameny, a World War II Army veteran, was among the first gays to protest outside the White House in 1965 and later the Pentagon, Independence Hall in Philadelphia, and other institutions. He fought against anti-gay bias in federal hiring, against the American Psychiatric Association's classification of homosexuality as a mental disorder, against D.C. sodomy law, and a wide range of other LGBT rights.
In world news, in Turkey, Sevzi Setin killed his transgender sister, Ramazan, on October 7th. Ramazan was already being treated for injuries connected with having fallen, quote, from a high place when Sevzi shot her. Sevzi, who shot his sister twice in the body and once in the head, said, "My brother was engaged in transvestism. I killed him. I cleansed my honor."
In South Africa, four of the nine men accused of brutally murdering lesbian Zoliswa Nakinyana, age 19, have been found guilty. Five of the men were acquitted, with the magistrate saying there was no evidence that linked them to the murder, although they were present when the crime occurred. The case had been delayed approximately 30 times over 5 years.
In Spain, plans to have the first official gay village in the country may be on hold. The project, located in Pueblo Blanco of Moclinejo, was gay entrepreneur Javier Checa's idea. Checa wanted to paint the whole village pink, name streets after gay artists. However, while the town okayed the building of 50 homes designated for LGBT individuals, it did not approve painting anything pink.
Poland has elected its first transgender member of parliament. Anna Grodzka, president of the transgender Europe member organization Transfusia, was a candidate of the Palakot movement, a new progressive political party.
In entertainment news, on November 21st, Grammy Award-winning artist Lady Gaga will release a Blu-ray and DVD copy of the Emmy Award-winning HBO special Lady Gaga Presents the Monster Ball Tour at Madison Square Garden that includes exclusive, never-before-seen footage.
The country music duo Sugarland will place a free concert in Indiana in memory of those killed in a stage collapse at this year's state fair. Sugarland will play the Conseco Fieldhouse in Indianapolis October 28th. Fans who held tickets to the state fair will have first priority in booking tickets. Among the seven people killed was lesbian Chicago activist Christina Santiago.
Justin Timberlake has signed on to portray Casablanca Records co-founder Neil Bogart in the movie Spinning Gold, which starts shooting next year. Spinning Gold will chronicle Bogart's career as a record executive who launched the careers of acts such as Donna Summer, Kiss, and the Village People. Bogart died of cancer in 1982 at the age of 39.
Lindsay Lohan is facing another round of legal issues after Elite Transportation Limo and Security Services filed a suit against her for more than $90,000. Elite claims that Lohan used its services for 3 months in 2009. Late charges and penalties have accrued. She completed 35 days of house arrest in June in connection with the theft of a $2,500 necklace.
Openly gay film director Lee Daniels, who directed Precious, is teaming with writer W. Merritt Johnson of Temple Grandin for a Showtime project that will shed light on the drag ball subculture. The drama, set in New York City, will focus on the disenfranchised, multicultural transgender youth of the ball subculture.
On October 10th, Cher cried after transgender son Chaz Bono performed a Paso Doble on Dancing with the Stars with dance partner Lacey Schwimmer, set to the theme of Rocky. Bono earned his highest score to date, 21 out of 30, as Cher wildly clapped with tears in her eyes. China Phillips was eliminated the following night.
Tony winner Heather Headley will headline the theatrical adaptation of the Whitney Houston movie The Bodyguard in London's West End. Opening night is slated for autumn 2012.
Rosie O'Donnell topped Oprah Winfrey in viewers on Oprah Winfrey's network OWN. The October 10th debut of The Rosie Show garnered 497,000 viewers. However, only 330,000 people watched Winfrey's new show, Oprah's Life Class, where the talk show titan mixes lessons she's learned with clips from 25 years of The Oprah Winfrey Show.
The Weinstein Company is moving the film My Week with Marilyn from November 4th to November 23rd, positioning it as a Thanksgiving holiday movie. Michelle Williams has received strong reviews for her portrayal of Marilyn Monroe, so have Kenneth Branagh as Sir Laurence Olivier, and Eddie Redmayne as the production assistant on the 7B Monroe Olivier movie, The Prince and the Showgirl.
HBO has made a deal to develop Lisa Cholodenko's Oscar-nominated comedy The Kids Are All Right as an hour-long series. Cholodenko, who co-wrote and directed the film, will write the pilot script and executive produce the series.
Ray Guyon, the longtime life partner of fashion designer Bob Mackie, died at age 83. Guyon was a designer himself, making costumes for stars such as Diana Ross, Judy Garland, Raquel Welch, Barbara Streisand. At age 14, Guyon, who was raised in Tehran, Iran, designed the morning clothes for Queen Fawzia, the wife of the Shah of Iran. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hi, you're listening to Lucy Lawless on Windy City Queercast with my favorite gal, Amy.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club. Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative,
hilarious,
exciting,
weird,
innovative,
campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of October 17th, 2011, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Don't miss the Joffrey Ballet's exhilarating world premiere production of Don Quixote, a timeless tale about bravery and romance. Go on an exciting journey where windmills become monsters and new adventures await beyond every horizon. Russian choreographer Yuri Posokov uses humor, drama, and passion to bring this Cervantes classic to life. Joffrey Ballet's Don Quixote at the Auditorium Theater now through the 23rd. Visit joffrey.org.
Critically acclaimed River North Dance Chicago presents their fall engagement November 4th and 5th at the Harris Theater in Millennium Park. The company's premiere of Daniel Ezrelo's Super Straight is coming down, a fiercely physical urban meltdown of epic proportions, along with the Harris Theater premiere of Charles Moulton's nine-person precision ball passing, a classic performance piece based on a highly synchronized and precise movement. For tickets, visit harristheaterchicago.org.
Writers Theater kicks off its 20th anniversary season with Tom Stoppard's award-winning modern classic The Real Thing, directed by artistic director Michael Halberstam. Catch the Metra to Glencoe or take a quick trip up the Edens to see this razor-sharp drama that examines the complex nature of love, art, and reality. Visit writerstheater.org to book your tickets today.
And Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Murder for Two is the killer new musical that delivers fun to die for, says the Sun-Times. A hilarious whodunit featuring two virtuoso performances. As one actor investigates a crime, the other plays all 13 suspects, and both play the piano. For more, visit chicagoshakes.com/murder, extended by popular demand through October 16th.
Athletic jumps, endless turns, and endearing individuality. Don't miss Rasta Thomas's Bad Boys of Dance for two nights only, November 5th and 6th at the Auditorium Theater. Bad Boys of Dance. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com or call 1-800-982-ARTS.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
How was I to know you wouldn't show? I gave it all I could. It wasn't good enough. And I
from December September 21st, 1993 till September 20th, 2011. Don't ask, don't tell was the official U.S. policy on homosexuals serving in the military. The policy prohibited military personnel from discriminating against or harassing closeted homosexual or bisexual service members or applicants, while barring openly gay, lesbian, or bisexual persons from entering military service or serving. Almost 15,000 servicemen and women were discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell during that entire period of time. And we've gotten to know some of those men and women. Back in May, Operations Specialist Second Class in the Navy and Radar Man Second Class in the Coast Guard, Lee Reinhart joined us on the podcast and told us a little bit about his story. And we are continuing to follow Lee and what this repeal has meant to him and what it may mean to other active and currently discharged or those who anticipate entering the service. So I'm really happy to catch back up with our friend Lee. Hey, Lee, how are you?
Hey, Amy, I'm doing good. Thanks for following up as well. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, I'm sure it's an exciting time, and yet it's not exactly like the smoke has cleared, but it's just a new day, right? It's just a new day, and there are new challenges and ways to, I guess, for all of you and all of us to suit up and show up and try to continue removing elements of discrimination from people who want to serve, you know, this great country. Can you tell me briefly your history in the military for people who may not remember the podcast where you were on back in the spring?
I joined the Navy in 1995. I came out to my family in central Illinois in the early 90s and decided the best thing for me to do was go off into the military. So I joined the Navy in 95. I served in the Navy from 95 to 1999. I had a very positive experience. Of course, I went in putting myself back into closet, but over the course of those 4 years, and especially the last 2 years I served, I was able to serve openly on a ship of 450 men. I served alongside them as an openly gay male and never had a negative experience. I was very blessed to have strong friendships and a support network, and I was able to serve my country and be openly gay at the same time. So I had a very positive experience.
Now, was that unusual? Were there other openly gay people? And how did you feel comfortable enough to be openly gay?
What I learned over time I had a very unusual ship, I would say that. But there were other commands that people were allowed to serve openly. It just was very subjective. A person could serve open in one command and move to the next command and not be so open. So you're constantly on an emotional roller coaster, not knowing how out you could be or how in the closet you had to be able to continue to serve. For mm-hmm. I using the perfect example of my best friend, who right at the same time I was coming completely out to my shipmates on my ship, he was coming to our ship for the first time, coming from a ship where he was investigated and almost discharged for being gay, mm-hmm. but then came to my ship and saw how open it was for me, and it was a culture shock for him. Mm-hmm. He had a horrible experience on his previous ship, coming to my ship and seeing how open I was. So it was very strange for him. So the law was very subjective mm-hmm. from one command to another.
And is that really based on the, excuse my lack and ignorance and knowledge of the technical terms, but was that because of the commander of the ship or that the leadership and how that demonstrated down a tolerance or an openness for people being able to be out?
Oh, yeah, I believe so. It all starts with the commanding officer, depending on his attitudes or his perception of gay people, mm-hmm. how he wants to handle it. It's all up to him. You know, he makes the final decision on his command, you know,
right.
the man who gets discharged and who doesn't. And, you know, for me, I went, and during my 4 year time and my 3.5 years on that one vessel, we went through 3 different captains because they rotate pretty quickly.
Uh-huh.
I would have never known how it would have been with the first captain. My positive time came with the second captain, and then I was completely out. And then the last 6 months I had left, a new captain came in, and you could tell quickly the tide was changing as well.
Mm.
So I believe that I probably left at the right time as well.
Yeah.
So, and that was the biggest problem with the law. You know, they had the law. They could use it or choose not to use it.
Right.
And someone could literally probably serve, you know, 16 years and have 4 more years left to go to retirement and go to that last command and lose everything because they might have had a positive experience for 16 years prior, but then go to that last command and they encounter a homophobic or the commanding officer that wants to use this law, you know, the law.
Well, and it's so interesting too, because what that asks your fellow, you know, your fellow officers to how they have to shift too. Like if they've been really, to not put you in jeopardy, right? Because if there is a code of tolerance and openness with one commander and then you get another captain, I mean, from you telling me the story, I see how kind of unwittingly somebody could potentially out you and not mean to, even if you are able to cap, you know, not cap it, like we can cap our sexuality, but you're able to hide it and become closeted again. But just, you know, the ease with which we get to know one another, and especially on one of these ships, I would imagine there's just an openness that develops that then to close off that has got to be detrimental to not only just you, but also your colleagues, you know, your fellow officers.
Well, the one thing that I've said over and over again, no matter where I've been interviewed, and especially now that it's officially over, is I think it's very important, as the history of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is being told or being put in the history books, that we have to remember, and for me personally, there were straight shipmates of mine that knew about me when it wasn't safe, when I wasn't out, and they kept that. And they allowed me to serve and protected me and kept my secret. Mm-hmm. And yet they were, and when I did decide to come out, they were still there standing beside me and being supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not have had the experience that I had in the Navy and the story I now have because of what happened later on in the Coast Guard. I would not have that story to tell or that life experience without those straight friends that I served with. So I think it's very important that history remembers there were straight people that we served with in the military who judged us by our character and not who we were or who we choose to love.
Yeah. So talk to me how your story continued and your leaving service.
Well, after I got out of the Navy in 99, my time was up, so I left on my own terms, and I joined the reserve components of the military, and then the horrific events of 9/11 happened. I checked in some few branches about going back in active duty, this time going to make it a career. I was approaching the age of 30, so if I was going to go back in, I was going to make it a career.
Mm-hmm.
I chose the Coast Guard this time at this point. And went right into the Coast Guard, went right to another vessel, and immediately, you know, met friends on the ship. I met another gay gentleman. That's the only thing we had in common. We were both gay. We became friends only. And we took some female crew members out to a gay bar one night with us.
Mm-hmm.
They went back and talked to other friends about the night they had out, and it started an investigation. And ultimately, I was given, you know, two choices, both with the same end result from the executive officer, the second person in command of the ship. When he investigated me, he basically gave my choices where I could immediately admit that I was gay. They would make my discharge as smooth as possible, or I could deny that I was gay, and they would investigate, and it would be the same outcome, and they would just make it rougher on me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, the total time I served in the Coast Guard was approximately 4.5 months. That's all I was allowed to serve my country and was given in the Coast Guard, simply because I paid a visit to a gay bar with some female shipmates of mine, and they talked about the wonderful evening that they had out that night that started an investigation.
Mm.
So,
did you regret that night? I mean, was that something that you regretted, or for a while? Was that a hard thing for you?
I have nothing to regret about it because nothing happened. You know, I mean, any normal person would go out with their colleagues and go to a bar and drink or hang out, and nothing happened. They saw nothing physical happen with anyone or anybody.
Right.
And so, and to be honest with you, Amy, looking back and talking about this, and as horrible as it is, and I hate it, because especially during the last few weeks when I'm reprocessing and looking at my military history, I mean, I would have over 10, 15, possibly 15 years if I was allowed to continue to serve and wasn't kicked out. Mm-hmm. So I lost a lot when it comes towards retirement, when it comes toward moving up in rank. But one thing that came from this experience that I'll never regret is it brought my mom closer to me. Mm-hmm. My family became more supportive. It helped them accept possibly who I was, but they realized that this was an unfair law, mm-hmm. that they saw their son and their brother go through this.
Mm-hmm.
So my family became very supportive, and the family that I inherited from AVER members in Chicago that fought this fight with me. So mm-hmm. there, I can't say I regret it, but I wish it would have never happened,
sure.
because where I could be financially and toward, you know, where I might be in my military career that I'll never know at this point, because I'll never be able to get that back.
Well, and so many, servicemen and women stand in your shoes. I mean, as we said, you know, almost 15,000, I think, is the number that, I don't know the exact number, but it's around that. Let's talk first about active duty, gay and lesbian service members who have been able to lay low, stay closeted, you know, move from good commander to good captain, you know, where they have been able to have the support of, you know, friends who within, you know, active duty who have maintained a tolerant and open view of them being there, or they don't know they're there. What does September the 20th, 2011's repeal mean to those service members, do you think, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I think the fear has been lifted. Mm-hmm. They now, on their own terms, can decide if they want to come out or if they want to remain in the closet or they want to take their time. It's on their own term, and they'll never have to fear again that someone's going to out them, not on their own term, and that they get to make the decision. They have the control of that decision, and whenever they choose to make that, but they don't have to worry about anyone outing them, or the veil of suspicion is gone. There's no, you know, they don't have to worry, but they can go and do their job that they've always wanted to do, but yet have to be able to have their private life, you know, and live that without fear.
So I think
that's very important.
Do you think that the, you know, kind of conservative slant that, wow, the harassment and abuse that will start if people serve openly, how much that will exponentially increase, do you believe that is just a scare tactic, or do you think that that's a real concern that service members are going to have to confront?
Can you rephrase the question? I'm sorry, Amanda.
So just like, you know, a lot of conservative pundits were saying, you know, well, if gay people serve, you know, we're trying to protect them, like yeah. that they're going to be other military personnel and people who once they know they're gay are going to really be hard on them or harass them. I don't mean in a legal way, but, you know, that they're just going to take a lot of flack. For being openly gay. Is that something that, I mean, obviously it's not a part of your experience. So do you think that was just a fear tactic to...
I think it totally was a fear tactic. And here's how I look at it. I think the people, the gay men and women that serve and had to serve in the closet, they have already made bonds and friendships with the people they serve with the best.
Mm-hmm.
And they have made those friendships. They would not have made those friendships knowing that, you know, I believe that most of the people that serve actively have chosen the friends, and the friends, the closest friends, and probably have already known the story, protected mm-hmm. their story, just like in my experience.
Right.
So I don't think that will ever be a possibility. And just like, you know, you didn't hear on the 20, yeah, you heard the story of the young man who stationed in Afghanistan who came out on YouTube to his father the day of, and you've heard a couple other stories of people, you know, that have hidden their identity and started a movement such as OutServe and stuff that officially came out on the 20th. You've heard those stories, but you haven't heard the overwhelming amount of stories. I'm sure there were thousands, you know, that people didn't make a big to-do out of it. They just went to work on the 20th and know that they don't have to fear that anymore.
Yeah.
Because I believe the majority of those people have chosen their friends wisely anyway. They've already served with them. Their coworkers probably already know or suspect, and it probably hasn't been an issue, or they probably wouldn't remain friends to begin with.
Right.
I just think that was just, it's the same old argument, you know.
Well, and we have to come out as gay people every day, right? I mean, we meet new people, we come out. I don't know why it should be any different for somebody serving in the military. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a workplace like any other. It's just a, you know, it's a heightened workplace, of course. But I mean, law enforcement, it can happen in a lot of places, you know, where people are in kind of a heightened environment.
Just like a lot of people use the argument that there was going to be a mass exodus of military people that didn't want to serve with gay men and women. My question is to them, and we know it's not true because of what we're hearing now, because the economy is so bad, no one wants to leave the military. But there's no mass exodus. Those people that think they can leave the military because they choose not to serve with a gay person, do they not think they're going to encounter gay people in the real world, you know, in the civilian world? So there's not going to be a mass exodus of troops because they refuse to serve with gay men and women. It isn't going to happen. We obviously haven't heard it now. So. Yeah.
And how is the military standing up to its end of the bargain here with implementing the changes that will be necessary to provide protections and also just any kind of education or to uphold the any non-discrimination or harassment?
I don't know the complete answer to that, but I could probably tell you the experience I've had trying to get processed back in, how the military has handled it, you know, the experience that I've had. You know, I've had a very positive experience with working with the Chicagos out of Chicago over the last year. There's been a lot of emotional roller coasters about, you know, when I could get processed, and then there was some stoppage along the summer, a lot of roller coasters in this past year. But I have to say that the military itself, once this has been done and it's official, they've been very professional. The people that I've encountered, they, even when I went to the physical last week, the people that I, once I turned my records over, it's clear on one of my military, on my DD-214, that I have a homosexual discharge.
Mm-hmm.
What the first guy that grabbed my folder, and it could be a very simple thing that he wanted things to happen for me, or maybe he just did it just to avoid any problems, but he removed the form. I had two forms, two DD-14s, one from the Navy, one from the Coast Guard, and he removed the one from the Coast Guard that had the homosexual admission on it, and I said, don't I need that as I go through process? He says, you do not need this one today. You're going to go off of this one. You'll be fine.
So let me just to back up, you've been on a process for our listeners. You've been on a process since we kind of saw the light of day that the repeal was going to happen. We talked to you in May. You've been in the process of reinstating, of getting back into active duty service. And so you've been working with people for a while, not just since September 20th, to take the steps so you're ready once the repeal happened to enter back in, right?
It's not active duty. I was always going to go look into the reserves. Last November, a quick recap. I know we're short on time.
No, we're good.
Last November, when there was a 7-day window when the Law Cabin Republicans won their lawsuit in California, and the judge told the Pentagon they had to stop. So the Pentagon came out and said, we can't kick anybody out. We're going to allow gay people in. There was a lot of people like myself running to recruiters. And I had a recruiter from Chicago come to my house within that 7 days and started the process. Well, fire court shot it down within 7 days. So that stopped the process again. So then the repeal did happen in late December. The president signed it on the 22nd or 20th. Of December, right before Christmas. But then we had this waiting period, they had to be certified, and there was going to be a 60-day window. So I stopped talking to recruiters the first part of the year. And then midsummer, the Chicago recruiters reached out to me and said, hey, they want to start working with folks like yourself. Are you still interested in doing this? And I said, yeah, I'm definitely very interested. We started the process again, had me scheduled for MEPS. The day before the president certified it, we still were scheduled. And then after the president certified it, so then the 60-day clock started ticking. I was told, well, the chain of command has once again stopped any processes for people like yourself. They're going to wait. They don't want any more problems. They're just going to wait until after the 20th. So it was once again shot down. So it's been an extremely emotional roller coaster this last almost 9 months,
right,
of ups and downs of trying to get back in to the reserve. So,
but you're saying, go ahead.
As of last week, I made it to, so basically I was waiting to get to that next step that I started a year ago. And as of last week, I got to that next step, which was the physical part of the process.
And re-entry. How did that go?
I passed.
Yay!
So a 38-year-old man still can be qualified to go into the military physically. So that's a good thing.
That's so, a very good thing.
So what I've learned, though, and a lot of the fear is, and I think we have to be careful as a gay community because of all the other circumstances, but we have to be mindful of it. But if I was to go into active, if I wanted to go into active duty, and I chose the Navy because I had prior served, right now, the United States Navy, so I'm told, is not taking any prior service people on active duty.
Okay.
So, I hope that or the gay community don't look at that. I mean, it could be, but we got to make sure. I want that to be, well, now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell, place the Navy doesn't, this is a way to stop people from coming back in and saying they don't want any prior service. But I think in reality, I'm speaking as a gay person, in reality, it's just that the military, unfortunately, is a time where they don't need people anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The troops are all coming home. No one's leaving when their time is up because the economy's so bad. So I don't necessarily think the Navy is enacting this policy right now of not taking any prior service because of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I think it's simply because they're overmanpower, you know?
Yeah.
They're overmanned.
Yeah.
So I think we have to be careful, but we have to be watchful of what, you know, now Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah.
Because other branches are taking prior service. It's just that I know this because I've been dealing with Navy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm able to, the Navy Reserves is taking prior service. So
what do you think now that because there are other arms of the military that are looking for, to hire, to recruit, are these efforts now going to be targeted toward the gay and lesbian community as now a new viable source of new people to enter the military?
I believe so. I think right after, I think day of, I met to look before we interviewed, but maybe I think in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Marine recruiters set up shop in an LGBT center the mm-hmm. day of repeal. So why not? Why can't they come and recruit, you know?
Yeah.
I consider myself very patriotic. I believe the military is a good thing for anyone to go experience fresh out of high school. So
mm-hmm.
I would encourage anyone to, you know, consider the military as an option, especially, you know, there isn't a lot of options for our youth out there right now.
Yeah.
If they can't afford to go to college, you know,
right.
Go serve your country and be part of it.
What does this mean for veterans? You know, we're starting to hear stories. Like I did a news story last week about an 83-year-old veteran who is, you know, starting to be starting to experience now retirement funds. And what does that mean? And I'm sure there's going to be now some of this stuff is going to go into the court system. And, you know, how do you think we have a long road ahead with, some of the veterans and some of the openly gay military members who are, you know, in their latter years? They're not 38.
Definitely. I think because a lot of veterans, and I didn't know this, and I haven't, this is hearsay from a veteran I've spoken with here. I'm working now in Columbus, Ohio, and I'm working with starting a chapter of Rever, much like the one in Chicago. And one of the things I'm hearing is a lot of our older veterans that are homosexual, and now that they're out of the military, they have, you know, been part of the homosexual, you know, the gay community, and are out, but they were fearful of going to the veteran services organizations or VA hospitals because they did not want to risk their retirement. And I had never, and I don't have all the facts of that, Amy, but just last night, talking to veterans on their phone, I had all my years of fighting this, I had never realized or never even heard that was a possibility for veterans if they chose to go get help at VA hospitals or veteran services, that they are at risk of losing their retirement funds.
Right, right.
So now that veil has been lifted as well, and that's just an amazing thing. That's an argument that if that's true, I had never even used that argument, and just to hear this gentleman's voice, and that's one of the things that we're trying to do, is to make sure that the veterans here in Ohio that we're working with know that it's okay now.
Yeah.
Go get help. You know, reach out to these. They can't do anything to your retirement or anything.
Right.
So, again, I don't have all the facts of that.
No, it's going to be a huge new effort, right? I mean, huge new effort for some of you who are younger, you know, to reach up to the older sector of that community. So tell me, I know this is going to be a little suspensed ending here. We're going to have a little bit of a cliffhanger, but we don't know the rest of your story. You've passed your physical, and we will definitely have you back on once we get more information. But what are you in a holding pattern for right now?
We're in a holding pattern for a couple of reasons. Obviously, it takes a little bit of time to process the paperwork. I think there was some delay in my paperwork because we knew that the physical could be a potential roadblock for me due to my loss of hearing that I had, which I passed that, you know, or it cleared that this time around. But that was going to be one of our biggest roadblocks, you know. And they are getting very, and that physicals in the military, they become very picky, which they want to make sure that we're completely physically fit, which I can see their point, but it was very different than what it was 16 years prior when I went there. But I passed that. So I think now that, because if I had not passed something in the physical, then it would add more paperwork and more requests for waivers. It would not have been the end all for me, but it would have made it much more difficult. So we're past that hurdle. We're waiting for the paperwork to get processed. We're waiting on some references, some work recommendations to come back, because what we're doing now, because I have been out for so long, Amy, I've been out over 9 years, the Navy can bring me in, but I can go down from an E5 to an E3 because I have been out for too long.
Mm-hmm.
So that if I was looking at active duty, I probably would not be going back in because that would be a huge cut in pay. It would be a huge loss for me to have to make up when I try to advance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that would probably be a very important factor if it was active duty we were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
It is still very important, even as reservists, to look at it. But right now, if I were to go in, I would go in as an E3, and that still could be a possibility. I'm willing to, you know, to look at that. But my recruiter is trying to do everything he can by getting this paperwork, these recommendations, to try to get me to go in as an E4 at least.
Yeah.
I left as an E5. We're trying to come back in at least as an E4.
Well, and it seems that the country owes all of you that. And I hope that this is more of what we're going to start discovering. As I said, you know, the smoke has cleared, there is still much more on this horizon and situations no one has ever been in that people are trying to navigate. And I just really appreciate you being an inside look as you navigate these waters, because I'm sure there may be people listening who stand very similarly in your shoes, or people who are looking at the military as a viable career option. And now see that as something that, you know, that they could actually hope for or want for their future. I want to say that we will follow up with Lee. And as soon as he knows more information, we're going to have him come back on the show. If you want more information on this whole story of just what's been happening since September 20th and what it means for you if you are in the service or one of your loved ones is happens to be, or you are looking at perhaps going into the military, a great website resource, which we will have linked in our show notes, is the Service Members Legal Defense Network, which is sldn.org, sldn.org. And there's lots of information there. It's a great, great resource. Lee, good luck to you. I know you know to call me as soon as we know more, and we'll get you back on the show.
I sure will, Amy.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
Well, everyone, I hope you have a great, great week. I'm headed off to upstate New York some for a couple of days. It's going to be glorious up there with the leaves changing. So I look forward to talking with you next week. Who knows what our show will be about? And if you're not catching the Rosie show, she's another one of our kind of queer sisters and brothers, family member here in the city, doing it right and doing it proud. And it's very Chicago-based, that show. So if you're able to catch it on OWN, let's get her ratings going up, 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 folks, and watch the Rosie show, because we love having her be a member of the Chicago community and the Boys Town community. All right, folks, have a great week. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.